Next case is 09-2336, District Attorney Counsel versus Bradley Kramer. Mr. King.
May it please the court. I'm Assistant Disciplinary Counsel Philip King, and I'm here on behalf of the Relator Disciplinary Counsel, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This disciplinary case involves an attorney who stole thousands of dollars from his law firm and tried to hide it. And for this, the Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline gave him a 2-year fully stayed suspension. Relator is asking this court to reject that recommended sanction and instead impose the sanction that was agreed upon by the parties, which is a 2-year suspension with 1-year stayed on the conditions listed in the report. And if I may, I'd like to address 3 reasons why the recommended sanction should be rejected. First of all, this court's precedent requires actual suspension in cases where attorneys steal from their law firm and try to cover it up.
Counsel, he has been suspended on an interim basis, correct?
Yes, he has.
And would you have us ignore that suspension, that time, in your calculation, in your recommendation?
We would not have you ignore that. And if the question is whether or not he should be afforded credit for his interim suspension, at the time that the stipulations were entered into, we understand that in order to get the credit, the respondent has to show credible evidence of remorse. At the time the stipulations were entered to, and that specific statement of no position was made, was prior to that time. And then at the hearing, the respondent presented mitigation evidence, but because such evidence is really an interpretation of how the panel feels about whether or not the attorney got it, we felt it was sufficient just to leave it up to the board to make that decision as to whether he'd be afforded the time served. We have no objection. But we just left it to the discretion of the board.
Is it perhaps more important that by saying he only gets a suspended sentence, that we're going against our precedent that always takes somebody out, pretty much always, if there is a theft, and so we're better off giving credit for time served and leaving the message with the bar that you still get a timeout suspension?
Exactly. And actually, that's my third point. The 3 points that I wanted to cover, the first was the precedent here establishes an actual suspension. The second being that if you take a look at the report and recommendation, the fully stayed suspension is inconsistent with the board's own analysis of the case law. And then third, as Justin Stratton pointed out, a completely stayed suspension in this type of case sets a precedent that undermines the seriousness of this type of misconduct and the public's confidence in the legal profession. Now, as to the first point, that the precedent demands an actual suspension, the facts in this case, we have a respondent who systematically stole $7,000 worth of funds from his law firm over a 4-year period. He had an agreement with his firm in order to pay them part of his fees. And he collected almost $12,000 in fees from 8 clients over from June to October of 2007 and kept all those funds. He even tried to cover it up by indicating that he had written off 1 client's bill and then 1 client hadn't retained him. And it wasn't until he was confronted by 2 police officers at the firm that he admitted his misconduct. Now, those are the facts that were accepted by the board. And in cases like that, they are actual suspensions. That means time off, as opposed to a fully stayed suspension in which there's no time off. This court has said that the presumptive sanction for misappropriation is disbarment. Now, we're not arguing for disbarment on this case. We think that this case here is more in line with the 2 cases, Carter and Brennan that was cited in the decision, that the respondents there misappropriated firm funds and both got two-year suspensions with one-year stayed. When you look at those cases, Carter and Brennan, it's the similar violations. In Carter, you had illegal misconduct involving moral turpitude, you had dishonest conduct, and you had conduct that adversely reflected on the lawyer's fitness. Brennan, you have the similar conduct as far as dishonest conduct and adversely reflecting conduct, but instead of the moral turpitude violation, you have a prejudice to the administration of justice. This case has all four violations, the combination of Carter and Brennan. You've got the identical aggravation as in Brennan. Dishonest motive, a pattern of misconduct, and multiple offenses. And the mitigation in Carter and Brennan are similar to this case here. So we believe that a two-year suspension with one-year stayed gives the respondent full consideration of the violations and the factors, including the mental health mitigation. In fact, there is a case that would indicate that but for the respondent's mental health mitigation, he might have received a more severe sanction, such as an indefinite suspension.
How does the mental health issue factor into excusing the theft? What was the evidence?
Well, there was testimony by Ms. Lesner, who was a clinical social worker, that said that he suffered from adjustment disorder with mixed disturbance in motion and conduct, which means that he had two stressors in his life at the time. His marriage was breaking up and his displeasure at his firm. And these stressors caused him to have a lapse in judgment. So that was the causation for his conduct in this
case. There was no clinical psychologist report, I take it. We just have the social worker report.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that was also, I believe, proffered for the information that he's over that, and now he's better, and he can come back and fully function as an attorney and exercise the requisite judgment as an attorney. And that's what I got out of pretty much the diagnosis, if you want to call it that, and the statement that he's all better now.
Exactly. And the relator is unaware of any precedent that brings that presumption of disbarment all the way down to a completely stayed suspension. We could find no case in which a respondent received mitigation for mental health that resulted in a completely stayed suspension. In fact, none of the cases in the material did a respondent receive a fully stayed suspension where he misappropriated law firm funds under any circumstances.
Mr. So, King, there was how much money involved? 7,000, did you tell us?
It was over 7,000.
And what's the status of restitution of that?
He's made restitution.
In full?
Yes.
And what about the level of cooperation?
He has cooperated in this case. So for that reason, we were asking that the court reject the recommended sanction because it's just not consistent with the case law. The second point, that the fully stayed suspension is inconsistent with the board's own analysis in the report. The report and recommendation goes through a two-part analysis, talking about the sanction and then talking about whether or not credit should be given for the interim suspension. It starts on paragraph 21. There it states that the board considers two cases, Brennan and Carter, which I just discussed, in determining the proper sanction in this case. And then the board found that the misconduct and the mitigating factors in this case were similar to Carter and Brennan, which the respondents got a two-year suspension with one-year stayed. So the logical indication is that the respondent here was going to get a two-year suspension with one-year stayed. And then in paragraphs 21 through 26, the board goes through the analysis under Margolez and Cook about whether or not a respondent should get credit for interim suspension. Again, after that analysis, the logical indication is that the respondent was going to get credit for his interim suspension. Then you get to paragraph 27, and then there's a complete disconnect. because instead of that two-year suspension with 1 year stayed, there's a two-year suspension completely stayed. And you're left wondering, where did that come from? There's only four opinions cited in the report, none of which are completely stayed suspensions. And why would the board go through the analysis under Margolis and Cook as to an interim suspension credit and not address it one way or the other? Obviously, the analysis and the recommended sanction don't match up. The only logical conclusion that can be drawn from the analysis in paragraphs 21 through 28 is a two-year suspension with 1 year stayed with the possibility of credit for interim suspension, and that is the sanction that we're asking for this case. Now, the final point is that a fully stayed suspension undermines the seriousness of misconduct in this case. Now, we recognize that if we were to receive the sanction that we're requesting, respondent may still immediately return to the practice of law, especially if he receives a credit. But we cannot view this case in vacuum. Our decision here affects future cases. And this court has had a stern stance on attorneys who steal, disbarment being the presumption, the presumptive sanction for misappropriation. This court has stated the continuing public confidence in the judicial system and the bar requires the strictest discipline in misappropriation cases, and then violations including fraud, deceit, deception, misrepresentation ordinarily call for an actual suspension. We are unaware of any precedent in which an attorney steals money from his firm and gets a fully stayed suspension. Adopting a fully stayed suspension in this case creates bad precedent that allows attorneys to think that if they steal money, they don't have to sit out. That contradicts the court's stern position on attorneys who steal, undermines the seriousness of this misconduct, and undermines and diminishes the public's confidence in the legal profession. A two-year suspension with 1 year stayed strikes the appropriate balance, allowing the respondent to return to the practice of law, but sending a stern message to the profession and to the public that stealing by attorneys will not be tolerated. And if the respondent were to receive any credit for his interim suspension, it's not going to take away from that. It'll just be an acknowledgement of the time that he set out. So in conclusion, based on the precedent set on this court that requires an actual suspension when an attorney steals from his firm, the fact that a two-year fully stayed suspension is inconsistent with the board's analysis in the report and recommendation, and that ordering a fully stayed suspension in this case sets a bad precedent that undermines the seriousness of the misconduct and the public's confidence in the legal profession, and for the other reasons stated in our brief, we ask that this court reject the recommended sanction, but instead impose the sanction of 2 years suspension with 1 year stayed under the conditions listed in the report and recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. King. Mr. Moser.
Chief Justice Moyer, Justices of the Supreme Court, may it please the court. My name is Mike Moser, speaking on behalf of Brad Kramer this morning. A rose by any other name is still a rose. The suspension in this case was an interim suspension, but it was and is and remains presently an actual suspension.
Can we not accomplish the same thing and not change our precedent by giving a suspension, but giving credit, and therefore we don't send the message to the public that we're giving a, you know, we're giving a pass on a theft in office? I mean, that's the concern I have. I mean, I looked at this and I had the same reaction. What? You know, because we never do that with a theft. But I understand your point that he has been out. The mitigation, it's a little questionable in my mind in terms of being mad at your firm, creating a disorder of some sort, but accepting that at face value, don't we accomplish the same thing and still preserve for the bar the strong message that you get from this court, a suspension if you steal?
Your Honor, I believe that the circumstances in this case, applying the rule of this court with respect to uniqueness, and also applying the fact that the psychological testimony through the social workers was not contested, where they had an opportunity to do so, they did not. Because in this case, the social worker Kosnarich with OLAP came to the same independent conclusion of the respondent's social worker, and that his psychological condition was a contributing factor.
But we have that in a lot of our theft cases. We have mitigating circumstances of drug or alcohol or mental health, and that's never, in my opinion, risen to the excuse of saying you get a totally state suspension.
By itself, perhaps not. But when you consider perhaps a rule of completeness, that in this case, all of the factors that apply with respect to the consideration of this court to leniency apply to this young man. There was no prevarication, there was no rationalization, there was no minimization.
Counselor, did he turn himself in?
Yes, Your Honor.
After the police confronted him?
That's correct.
He didn't, before that, he didn't go to the firm and say, I've stolen?
That's correct.
Okay, so he got caught.
He did get caught, but he had stopped his conduct before that, and that was recognized by the panel.
And he's supposed to be given credit for not stealing more?
I think you should give him credit for at least stopping, and he was on his way to redemption, as opposed to continuing on.
Be on his way to the senior partner to tell him that he stole money?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Was he on his way to the senior partner to tell him he stole money?
No, he was not, Your Honor.
Okay.
How do we know he wouldn't have stolen
more? And I want to make it clear, I did not argue that point, by the way, at the panel. That was a question that was raised by one of the panel members, and I thought it was significant, at least to the extent that he had stopped the conduct.
He had stopped the conduct, but do we know why? Did he testify as to why he stopped the conduct? Was it because he realized it was wrong and he was going to report it? I'm sorry, to his
Yes. Your
partner?
And I believe that is in the record.
That in the record?
I don't want to misstate the record, but I believe his testimony was that he believed that this was the wrong thing, and I think that his conscience was getting the better of him at a time in his life when he still had all of the stressors available to him, working on him.
But did he testify that he was going to make restitution to the firm before the police confronted him?
No, clearly not.
Mr. Moser, your client has been not practicing since July of 2008, correct?
Actually, earlier than that, but not certainly asking the court to consider that other than for the issue of contrition. He stopped practicing in, I believe it was January of that year. In July, the interim suspension of 2008 went into effect.
Okay. And for protection of the public, as you know, we're concerned about the treating of a mental health problem. One of the things that the board was recommending was the treatment and also the monitoring. Have those steps been taken or looked into?
The treatment is ongoing. That is correct. That continues. Even though there was testimony from both social workers that he has been rehabilitated without the likelihood of a reoccurrence. In fact, it was asked of Scott Moat, who testified personally, would you trust this man with your money? And he spoke most eloquently with respect to Mr. Kramer, and he said he definitely would. However, with respect to the monitoring, that won't go into place when and if this court sees fit to grant him the privilege of returning to the practice of law. But so the monitoring has not been established. That'll be set forth at a later time.
There was a stipulation you entered into with respect to the appropriate sanction being 2-year suspension with the second year stayed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that what you're asking for?
That is what I asked for at the hearing.
But that's but what that, we that's more than just asking for it. It occurs to me that both parties stipulated that was the appropriate resolution.
Exactly correct, Your Honor. And if things remained exactly the same at that time and were exactly the same now, that's exactly what I would be asking for. And let me explain that. At the time of the stipulation, he was still on probation. He has subsequently completed that probation. He completed that probation and was given a certificate by the court, an entry, terminating his probation within a day or so of the hearing. This is post-stipulation. Okay. I would never ask this court to grant a stay or perhaps even grant credit for time served under circumstances where the attorney is still on probation. I mean, how would the public feel about it if a trial attorney is in the midst of a trial and has to say, excuse me, Judge, I have to report to my probation officer? I would not expect this court to grant that type of leniency with respect to a situation where a member of the bar is still serving his penalty with respect to the criminal conduct in this case.
So the basis of the stipulation was that he was at that time presumed to be under some period of supervision by the court.
Correct. And I did, however, ask for credit for time served, and that was understood, by the way, and acknowledged by Attorney Costa at the hearing, that I would be asking and making a plea for credit for time served. No question about that. If I have no doubt.
So the factor that's changed is the court terminated his probation, and now you're seeking to eliminate the stay on the second year.
Because of the interim suspension, and because I believe that the panel and the board got it right, even though it flies in the face of what the court may consider to be applicable precedents and what message it may seem to send to the general public, I believe that the court can certainly craft a decision which acknowledges both the suspension and the correctness of the panel's decision, considering all of the factors. That they stayed suspension with the interim suspension having occurred meets the requirement that the public has, that Justice Stratton has addressed with respect to the public concern.
The gap here is that your speculation as to what happened, but the board, I was really surprised, I guess, that the board did not tell us in its recommendation why it went so far afield of almost all of our case law and the stipulation that was entered here. As Mr. King mentioned, they go through this list of the Margolis case in particular, and then, which draws you to think, well, they're going to apply the standard there. Well, they applied it, but I question how they got the results they got. And they didn't help us by explaining. Was that your explanation of why the board did what it did?
Perhaps the board, and again, speculation, Your Honor, but perhaps the board felt that by giving a stayed suspension, it would then be entitled to make the conditions that it imposed, which may not be available if they had merely made a suspension with, or 2 year suspension with 1 year stayed on conditions.
We can impose any conditions we want. I mean, that doesn't bar them from recommending conditions on someone, even if their term has been served.
Perhaps so, Your Honor. I'm just asking you. You asked me for speculation. I'm giving you my best guess on that.
It befuddles me, frankly.
Counsel, how set up the sequence again for me of when he went off probation, when the court terminated his probation.
We brought we received the facts of the entry releasing him from probation within a day or so, as my recollection is, of the actual hearing.
So the hearing was over, and then he gets released from probation.
No, the hearing was just about to commence. We brought the entry with us, and we supplemented the record at that time. At the time we arrived at this court and met with the panel, we brought the entry to court with us.
Okay, so you originally stipulated to the 1 year, the 2 year, 1 year stayed.
Right.
And then he got off of probation, and that's why. Were you arguing then at the hearing to abandon your stipulation and go with a total stay?
No, Your Honor.
You were still sticking with the validity of the stipulation.
Your Honor, I would have been perfectly pleased if the court had written this opinion with a 2-year, 1-year stayed, and credit for time served to accomplish the result.
You mean, when you say the court, you mean the panel?
I'm sorry, the panel.
Okay, so.
I just don't want to throw the panel or the board under the bus, Your Honor, with respect to a decision I think reaches the result, ultimate result.
Well, it's better than you bargained for. It's better than you hoped for. It's better than you bargained for, and now you're trying to, you know, obviously fill in the gaps for us.
I don't want to insult the board or the panel on a very thoughtful decision that they made and the work and the time that they put into it. They may be, in this court's eyes, wrong. It may be a better precedent, a better application of your law and what you want to do in the future with respect to other cases to apply the standard and find a bright line with respect to these types of cases, that it should be an actual suspension, applying credit for the interim suspension as an actual suspension, so that we don't end up with a result of more time off because he's not given credit for this 21 months that he has been off from the practice of law. To that extent, I can understand it. But I do appreciate the time and the effort and the thoughtfulness that the panel and the board put into this decision. One of the hallmarks that gets all lawyers in trouble is a failure to acknowledge and accept responsibility or minimization and rationalization. I don't think that those are just minor points. I think those loom largely because in many of the cases that have been cited in the Carter case, I believe, there was no acceptance of responsibility. So, and in Brenner, there was an actual suspension, but there was no issue of credit for time served in that case. So I don't know that those cases exactly are appropriate for guidance either. But when disciplinary counsel seeks to impose the precedent of the Schwiederman case as if that is a case that is directly on point, I have to stand and say, that's about as absurd as his statement that the panel and board's decision was absurd. Because Schwiederman, in that case, there was no acceptance of responsibility. The psychological component was totally debunked by the relator. There was other infractions with respect to disciplinary ethical misconduct, default judgments taken with respect to client issues, failure to communicate, prior disciplinary history, and all of that. So that when my colleague says that that case is directly on point, I find that abhorrent, because it's not. And neither is the Powers case, where you have the magnitude of the loss. But as Justice Stratton has said in another case, theft is theft, whether it's large or whether it's small, and we respect that and understand that. I believe that that is one of the bright lines that we have to guide us. Nobody's attempting to justify that in this case. I'm seeking the end result. My colleague is seeking the precedent. And I hope at the end of the day, we will end up at the same place with respect to this young man. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Moser. Mr. King, you saved 2 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to address maybe a couple of points. The first being that the interim suspension equals an actual suspension, and that's not the case. I mean, the interim suspension is not a substitute for an actual suspension, and this case here, these proceedings are not tantamount to a criminal prosecution because a respondent can be denied that credit. So it does not substitute for the actual suspension in this case, the fact that the respondent has been serving an interim suspension. And bottom line, we're asking for the court to simply fix paragraph 27. The analysis was thorough as far as the sanction, as far as the interim suspension. There was just a logical indication from that, but when you got to paragraph 27, it wasn't there. And that's simply what we're asking for. I think that strikes the balance, keeping the precedent, the stern message on a lack of tolerance for appropriation cases involving law firms or appropriation cases in general, and allowing the respondent, in light of mitigation and other factors, to return to the practice of law. If there's no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. King. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.